Okay, so picture this, a world obsessed with youth and pleasure. Like, even aging is kind of, well, frowned upon, almost indecent. Now, drop into this picture an elderly man, like frail and wrinkled, totally clashes with everything else. And that's how we're starting our deep dive into Brave New World. This guy's appearance, I'm talking withered, almost alien in this pristine setting, it actually causes like real shock, disgust, even.
True.
It reveals this core value of this brave new world, this pursuit of eternal youth and, easy satisfaction.
Right.
And that's what we'll be unpacking today using excerpts from Huxley's novel. So get ready to explore a future where history is literally dismissed as bunk and individuality. Well, it's practically heresy. Are you ready? Because Huxley, he doesn't really ease us in. He kind of just drops us right into the deep end. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he throws his head first into this unsettling utopia. It's the stark contrasts, like that image of the old man, that immediately highlight how different this world state is from, well, anything we've ever known.
Totally. And one of the first things we hit is their social structure. And it's built on some, well, pretty mind-bending concepts like take the Bokanovsky groups. Instead of natural births, they've got this system where one embryo can be like multiplied, dozens, hundreds even, of identical humans.
Wow.
Imagine being like genetically designed to be a cog in a giant machine.
It's wild.
And then to really solidify this system, they've got conditioning.
Right.
Imagine this. You're a baby. Sound asleep, and instead of lullabies, you're hearing phrases like, ending is better than mending, whispered in your ear.
It's like
That's hypnopedic learning, subliminal messaging, but on overdrive.
totally. And before you think, oh, that's just about fixing things, it goes way deeper.
Oh,
It's
absolutely.
about consumption. It's
Yeah.
the foundation of their entire economy. These
Exactly.
messages are playing constantly while they sleep, shaping their desires, their values. Ending is better than mending. It encourages a throwaway culture, this constant craving for the new.
It's like brainwashing, but by like catchy jingle.
Right.
And Huxley wrote this in the 1930s, but it feels so relevant today, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. It makes you question those messages we're bombarded with every day.
Yeah.
The subtle and not so subtle ways our desires are shaped by, well, by forces outside
For
ourselves.
sure. Okay, so let's shift from the societal level down to the individual. We meet some pretty fascinating characters in these excerpts. Each one kind of highlights a different facet of this world. First up, Bernard Marx. He's an alpha plus,
Okay.
top tier in their rigid caste system,
Right.
but even he feels like a misfit.
Yeah. What's fascinating about Bernard is he embodies this like inherent human need for something more than just, fleeting pleasure.
Right.
Like he's got this itch he can't scratch, this yearning for like genuine connection.
And this yearning is what makes him so different from someone like, say, Lenina Crown.
Right.
Now, she's the epitome of a world state citizen, beautiful, desired, completely shaped by her conditioning. But those casual relationships, fueled by this constant stream of soma, their version of a happiness pill,
Yeah.
kind of makes you wonder, like, what's she actually even looking for, you
Yeah.
know?
And her reaction to the primitive world outside the world state, specifically to that aging man we talked about earlier, it shows just how ingrained their aversion to anything natural, anything real has become.
Totally. And speaking of the primitive world, we're introduced to the reservation. This place is like a punch to the gut compared to that sterile, controlled environment of the world state. We're talking poverty, disease, ancient rituals. It's a complete 180 from everything we've seen so far.
Yeah, and this is where the whole idea of perspective gets really interesting.
Right.
We might see the poverty and the hardship of the reservation as shocking, maybe even repulsive, kind of echoing Lenita's reaction to the old man.
Yeah.
But for the people who live there, it's just normal. Huxley isn't really judging either way of life. He's forcing us to confront this vast spectrum of human
Well,
experience.
I like that.
Yeah.
And that spectrum, it comes into sharp focus when we finally meet John, the savage, who was raised on the reservation. His whole existence, his values, everything about him, it's a direct challenge to the world state's carefully constructed order.
It's true.
He really does. John's like this potent symbol, you know? He's everything the world state has spent like centuries trying to erase.
Absolutely.
Love, family, even the freedom to experience like deep sorrow or loss. Those are the dangers they've engineered right out of their existence.
Yeah, and it's through John's eyes that we start to see the potential consequences of that kind of social engineering, you know.
Yeah.
Take his relationship with Linda, for example.
Yeah, Linda. She's originally from the World State, but after this accident, she ends up stuck on the reservation, raising John all alone.
Right.
It's like she's caught between these two worlds, but
That's.
never fully belonging to either one.
And her story, man, it's heartbreaking. You see her clinging to Soma as like her only comfort. Her mind and body are just ravaged by years of, well, dependence, really.
It's rough.
It really shows you what happens when pleasure becomes a substitute for, well, for genuine human connection,
Yeah.
you know, for
Yeah.
actually facing life's challenges head on.
Yeah. You're right. It's tragic because, in a way, both Linda and the citizens of the World State are totally lost, just in totally different ways, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
But back to John for a second. His arrival in this brave new world is jarring, especially when you contrast it with the realities of the reservation, right? At first, he's almost like a kid in a candy store, like totally captivated by all the shiny techs, all the crazy
Oh,
experiences.
totally. But then that wonder just like sours. It's
Yeah.
like offering someone a gourmet meal after they've only ever eaten, you know, scraps.
Right.
That richness, that intensity, it's overwhelming.
Totally. Especially when that quote unquote richness lacks any real substance. And this is where John's love of Shakespeare becomes such a vital point of contrast.
Yeah. Here's this guy raised on these tales of love, loss, betrayal, you know, the full spectrum of human emotion.
Yeah.
He sees right through the shallow entertainment of the world state, their feelies that offer nothing but like fleeting sensory stimulation.
Yeah.
Can you imagine reading Romeo and Juliet after a lifetime of, you know, whatever the world state considers entertaining? The difference would blow your
It's
mind.
crazy. He sees the emptiness behind the facade, right? The
Yep.
real cost of their manufactured happiness.
Yeah.
And that disillusionment, it eventually drives him to rebel, to try and shake them out of the soma-induced stupor. That scene where John chucks the soma rations away, so good, so powerful, even if it totally
It's
backfires.
huge. John's rebellion, him throwing away the Soma, it reveals this like core conflict in the book. Can true freedom even exist in a world where even unhappiness is engineered out?
Right.
He's rejecting their control, their attempts to just dictate everyone's emotional experiences.
Yeah, he's basically saying, like, to be fully human, we have to embrace all of it, right? The good and the bad, the painful and the joyous.
Exactly. And his outburst during that death conditioning exercise, it just drives the point home even further.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, they bring kids to the hospital for the dying to like desensitize them to death, to make it just another part of life.
It's crazy.
But John, having seen death and all its, you know, raw, primal intensity on the reservation, he's horrified.
Of course.
And it's like he's holding up a mirror to their callousness, you know, forcing them to confront the humanity they've tried so hard to erase.
Through John, Huxley's making us ask ourselves some really uncomfortable questions about our own relationship with discomfort, with, well, all the messier parts of being human, honestly.
It is interesting, isn't it? The world state, they're terrified of death. So they sanitize it, try to control it, erase it. But when you do that, well, you kind of eliminate the beauty of a life lived fully, a life that embraces the light and the shadow.
Totally. And speaking of control, we can't forget Mustafa Mon, the world controller. He's like the architect of this whole system, the ultimate pragmatist.
Right.
But he's not like a tyrant. Not really. Not in the, you know, the traditional sense at least.
Yeah.
He actually seems to believe he's creating the best possible world, one without war, poverty, even like unhappiness itself.
And that's what makes Mon such a fascinating, but also kind of terrifying
But
character,
it's
right?
true.
He represents the dangers of like completely unchecked utilitarianism. This whole idea that anything, no matter how messed up it seems, can be justified as long as it brings the greatest happiness to the greatest number of
Oh,
people.
right. It's like the ends justify the means, no matter what.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And his explanations for how the world state works, they're both like intriguing and really disturbing at the same time.
Totally.
He argues that stability and happiness are like the most important things, even if it means totally sacrificing individuality, passion, even art itself.
And his whole argument about the 9 years war, the chaos before the world state, he uses that as like a warning,
Oh,
right?
absolutely.
Saying that freedom and choice just inevitably lead to suffering.
It's like he's saying, hey, this is the price you pay for free will. You sure you want that burden?
Yeah. Like, be careful what you wish for.
Totally. And then he doubles down with this like chilling idea that happiness can be completely manufactured, engineered even through conditioning. and of course a steady supply of soma.
It makes you wonder, though, right? Like, can we even call it happiness if it's basically artificial, if it means suppressing our full range of emotions?
Exactly. That's the question. And it brings us right back to John. He's
Right.
like this wrench jammed into Mon's perfectly oiled machine.
Totally.
He just refuses to conform, to trade his freedom for this, prepackaged life of contentment.
And his final act, his escape to that lighthouse, that's like a desperate attempt to find some space for his own idea of what freedom really means, right?
Oh, absolutely. He's trying to escape those constant temptations, those pressures of the world state,
Right.
trying to live by the values that he holds dear.
But even in isolation, it still haunts him. The memory of his mother, his own desires, they don't just disappear.
It really highlights how powerful our humanity is.
Yeah.
John's story isn't about winning or losing. It's this like poignant reminder that even under incredible pressure, the human spirit, with all its complexities and contradictions, it can't be completely snuffed out. It's always there.
And John's fate kind of forces us to ask, what price are we willing to pay for a life without any pain or unhappiness? Is it even possible to have that without sacrificing something essential about what makes us human?
It's a tough one, right? Huxley doesn't give us easy answers. He leaves us wrestling with those questions long after we put the book down.
And that's what makes it a great book. It stays with you, makes you think about your own values, your own choices, makes you think about the world we're creating for ourselves and for future generations.
Totally. And the crazy thing is, Huxley wrote Brave New World back in the 1930s, but his vision feels like eerily relevant now, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. We're surrounded by technology that's supposed to make our lives easier, more fun, more comfortable.
Right. Eliminate any kind of discomfort or friction.
It makes you wonder, are we, like those people in the world state, becoming too reliant on these external sources of happiness? Are we losing our ability to like think critically, to deal with tough emotions, to really experience the full range of being human?
Those are the big questions, right? I think that's Huxley's message to us. Stay alert, stay aware, and question the narratives we're being fed. Fight for a future where happiness isn't something you buy, where it's a result of living a life that's true to yourself in all its messy, complicated glory.
So well said. So next time you grab your phone, looking for that quick hit of dopamine, that instant gratification,
Huh.
take a second. Just ask yourself, what would Aldous Huxley think? It's something to think about as we navigate this brave new world of our own making.
It really is.
That's all the time we have for today's deep dive. Thanks for listening.